Introducing Home Care Plus, a new subscription service from Lowe's that helps make life easier by giving members a hand with home maintenance. Let Lowe's tackle the tasks you keep meaning to do, like electric dryer vent cleaning, replacing hard-to-reach light bulbs, and more. Subscribe to Home Care Plus for just $99 a year and consider your to-do list done. Members get more at Lowe's. Available in select zip codes only. Cancel anytime. Non-refundable fee. Product purchase required. Terms and service restrictions apply. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
What's up, baby? It's Bretzky, and I'm here to tell you that SpinQuest.com is giving out free sweeps coins. All you gotta do is purchase a $10 coin pack, and guess what? They're gonna give you the coins from a $30 coin pack. That lets you play all your favorite games like Blackjack, Wanted, Dead or Wild, and we're talking real cash prizes, baby. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Odd Trails is a true paranormal podcast. If you have a story to share, send it to stories@oddtrails.com. Enjoy the show.
Forget facts. Forget logic. Forget everything that seems real. Just trust. Believe.
I Died in Another Universe by Louisa Golightly. Has anyone very clearly died in what seemed to be another universe? This just happened to me for the first time, and I'm having a hard time wrapping my head around it. I dreamt that I died. See, I was in the hospital looking at my body, and it looked just like me, but it was clearly dead. It was a sterile environment, and two doctors were looking at me. My body itself looked awful. My hair was in a messy bun, a tube was down my throat, and my tongue was sticking out. I remember being incredibly surprised that I died because when I went into surgery, I wasn't worried. I had a failing organ of some kind. I didn't think that I could actually die. Now, this was my attitude in real life as well. I always felt it would be hard to kill me. There were also overlaps between that world and this one. In that universe, I had the surgery on the day of my 40th birthday, January 1st. My birthday in this world, or universe, is January 1st as well. And yes, I just turned 30. Additionally, a person I know in this universe was also someone I knew in that one. I'll explain a bit more about that later. I then got bored looking at myself, and I saw my dad sitting on a chair, talking to himself. It seemed like he was talking to me as a spirit. He was apologizing for the decision that he had made to remove my life support because the doctors had told him there was no brain activity and he didn't want to leave me in that condition. His race was different in this other universe. I remember everything about him. He was smaller, seemed feeble, or like he had an illness, something taking a toll on him. He had beauty marks that looked like freckles on his skin and really thick, lovely hair. I tried to tell him that I understood why he made the decision, but he couldn't hear me. He was so sad. My spirit then skipped my funeral and headed to a nearby parking lot where I wandered around happily, looking at everyone standing outside. I was fully aware that I was a ghost at this point. Occasionally, there would be another person who could see me, and both of us would be so happy to realize it. I then came upon a little boy who appeared to be Hispanic with beautiful long hair. He was about 8 or 9 years old, playing with the basketball. He was all by himself, standing off to the side. When he realized that I was there, he looked up at me. He was so sad. He asked why I didn't take him with me, saying that I was supposed to. I told him it wasn't his time to go with me yet. Afterward, I was in this event hall, not for my funeral, but for something else. I was sitting at a table with my grandma in this universe, who is now deceased. We were looking at the parking lot through this large picture window on the wall. I was reading a newspaper and she was drinking coffee. I remarked, "Being dead is so fun. I can do all of the things that I could already do when I was alive." And I proved this by picking up a coffee mug behind me. "But only some people can see me here," I added. I remember asking someone who could see me whether or not one of my former friends cried at my funeral. This is someone that I still love very much, but no longer speak with in this lifetime. Someone told me, "Not really." And I suddenly had a glimpse of him sitting at the funeral, looking either indifferent or maybe shell-shocked. I wasn't able to tell. I think in that life, we were as disconnected as we are in this one. I then woke up. It was like being dropped back into my physical body in this universe. I could feel and hear it. It was like a light switch being turned off in one universe and then turned on in another. I was so disoriented for about 2 to 3 hours after this. I remember waking up and thinking about how strange it was that I was dead in one universe but alive in this one, doing something as ordinary as making my bed. When I went downstairs to let the maintenance men in, I kept thinking, I can't believe my family and friends in that world were so sad thinking that I was dead, but I'm right here, answering the doorbell. By far, this was the strangest quote-unquote dream I've ever had, but the level of consciousness and detail was so profoundly real. Has anyone ever experienced anything similar?
Waverly Hills Sanatorium by Amber. I wanted to share an experience I had at Waverly Hills Sanatorium in Louisville, Kentucky. I know you've covered Waverly Hills before, but I thought an extra story wouldn't hurt. I grew up in Kentucky and have always loved that part of the country. It's rich with history and full of old buildings to explore and investigate. I've always been fascinated by odd and strange places. They're just so interesting. I had a friend who was also into spooky things, and one night they suggested we drive to Waverly Hills Park. The park is near this humongous, infamous Waverly Hills Sanatorium. I thought, oh my gosh, that sounds like a pretty cool spot. I've never been before. Let's go. For a little background, Waverly Hills Sanatorium was built in the 1920s as a tuberculosis hospital. Louisville had an extremely high death rate because the city was mostly built on low swampland, which made the moist air perfect for spreading the White Death. Thousands of people died at Waverly Hills, so many that they say it was about one death per day. The hospital closed in 1961 after the success of antibiotics. It was turned into another hospital for the elderly for a while, but eventually it was abandoned. Ever since, people have claimed it's haunted. Everyone's heard the stories. The little boy, Tommy, who plays with his ball in the hallway. The smell of food being cooked in the kitchen. And the nurse who tragically took her own life on the fifth floor. When we arrived, we were the only car in the parking lot. We were facing a pond with the hospital just visible over the tops of the trees. The dark, winding driveway to the park was behind us. It's not an easy place to walk to. There aren't any sidewalks, and it's mostly surrounded by residential homes. The driveway is long, dark, and secluded. It was about 2 a.m. on a Tuesday. We were just sitting in the car talking. We were trying to spook each other, joking around like, "What if something ran at us?" or "What if we saw someone right now?" We were just laughing until we weren't. That's when we saw her, a woman, walking down the driveway toward the pond. She didn't look at us. She didn't look around. She just stared straight ahead and walked at a slow, steady pace. What she was wearing immediately sent chills through me. She was dressed in a long white gown that went all the way down to her feet. It looked old-fashioned, not like something someone would wear today or go for a long walk in. Her extremely long, dark hair was pulled back into a ponytail, and it went all the way down her back, past her waist. I couldn't stop thinking, what is she doing here? Why is she walking out here in the middle of the night? It didn't make sense. The park is so isolated, and it would have taken her forever to walk there from anywhere. I hated the feeling she gave me. I couldn't stay. As soon as she passed our car, I started it up and took off. My body reacted before my brain could catch up. I just knew I had to get out of there. Afterwards, I tried to make sense of it. Maybe she was just some weird woman trying to scare people. Maybe she liked taking midnight walks in a long white dress, I don't know. But deep down, I knew there was something off about her. A few years later, I went on the Waverly Hills Ghost Tour. They walk you through the hospital floor by floor, sharing the history, the stories, and all the famous ghost sightings. They even take you down the body chute, the tunnel where they used to transport the dead. Toward the end of the tour, the guide shared one last story. She said that people have reported seeing a woman in a long white gown wandering the property. They don't know who she is or why she's there, but so many people have seen her that they've added her to the tour. I froze. That was the exact woman I saw. I'd spent years trying to talk myself out of believing it was anything paranormal. I thought, she's just somebody strange out walking in the middle of the night, trying to scare one random car. But hearing that others had seen her, so many others, made me question everything. Who was she? Was she a patient? A nurse? Something else entirely? To this day, I wish I had stayed in that parking lot to watch her a bit longer. Maybe I would have gotten some answers, but that night I just couldn't. She's something I'll never forget. And after hearing the ghost tour mention her, I can't help but wonder, does she still walk the park at night?
It's tax season, and by now, I know we're all a bit tired of numbers. But here's an important one you need to hear. $16 billion. That's how much money in refunds the IRS flagged for possible identity fraud. Here's another one. 1 in 4 honest, hardworking, tax-paying Americans has been a victim of identity theft. But it's not all grim news. LifeLock monitors millions of data points per second for your personal information and alerts you to threats you could easily miss on your own. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock's U.S.-based restoration specialist will fix it, backed by another good number, the $1 Million Protection Package. In fact, restoration is guaranteed or your money back. Don't face identity theft and financial losses alone. There's strength in numbers with LifeLock Identity Theft Protection for tax season and beyond. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart and save up to 40% your first year. That's 40% off at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hoofy, A True Story An Inmate Told Me by Via 1999. This is an old story that was told to me a few years ago. I was just reminded of it a couple of days back when retelling it, and I'm curious if anyone else has ever heard of this, or if it was just made up by the person who told me. I used to work at a maximum security prison where I was in charge of overseeing the production of food. I wasn't a CO, but I was able to talk to the inmates very frequently. One early morning, I was doing paperwork while one of the inmates was stalking something, and we started talking about urban legends. This man was Native American, I think Navajo, but I could be wrong. He'll be dubbed Storm for the sake of this story. Storm told me about a legend and an experience that he had on his reservation about some sort of devil. He called it Hoofy. He claimed that there was this handsome man with a tall white cowboy hat and boots who frequently goes to casinos. He doesn't gamble, but he flirts with young, beautiful women and lures them out of the casino. Once he takes these women to his home, he transforms into this tall creature with shaggy goat legs and long black hair. His beautiful face then turns into a mix of a demonic horse and a wolf with piercing red eyes. He devours these women and leaves their clothing around his homestead as mementos of his killings. Now, I laughed because it sounded like a typical monster story. But Storm got very serious, and he told me that he had a close encounter with Hoofy and barely made it out alive. Storm and his cousin lived on an Arizona reservation on the other side of South Mountain, very close to my hometown in Estrella Mountain. One day, he and his cousin were drinking and trying to pass the time, as there wasn't much to do. They decided to take a walk into the desert, just for the hell of it. Not much else to do anyway. It was about half an hour before sundown, so the two headed off in one direction and enjoyed the scenery of the plain desert. They walked for about 15 minutes or so when they came across this abandoned, church-like building. It was old and decrepit, with weak wooden structures that looked as though a stiff wind could knock the whole thing down. The two walked through the church and out the back, stepping through broken pews and over creaking floorboards. They laughed about how freaky and weird this old building was before slowly making their way out. They exited through a door and jumped over a trench just past the end of the church. The pair continued walking and laughing when they came across something strange. Storm said that they saw a wide assortment of shoes. Muddied up red high heels, black flats, torn brown pumps, an array of women's shoes scattered around, broken and dirty, and clearly abandoned for some time. Storm picked up one of the shoes to inspect it when he turned to his cousin. The look on his cousin's face was one of complete horror. His face was pale, his eyes were wide, and he was close to tears as he stared behind Storm. Storm was about to turn around when his cousin stopped him. "No," he whispered, placing his hands on Storm's shoulders. "Don't look up. Keep your head down." Frightened, Storm followed his cousin's instructions. He had never seen his cousin so scared. And then he heard it. A pair of heavy footsteps walking behind him. The sound of labored breathing matched the steps, and Storm felt as though his entire body had dropped 10 degrees in temperature. His shoulders were shaking as his cousin grabbed his hand and stepped back slowly. "We need to go," his cousin said. His voice was nearly drowned out by the heavy footsteps behind them, but Storm heard him just barely. "Whatever you do, don't look back." That was the last thing his cousin said before he took off running. The pair ran as fast as they could, sprinting past the old church and racing toward their homestead. His cousin yelled out native prayers, hoping some sort of ancestral guardian would stop this beast. All the while, Storm could hear the galloping of hoofs behind him, along with the sound of hot, sticky breath, smelling of rotten flesh. He felt it against the back of his neck, spurring him on to keep running, no matter how exhausted he became. He knew that if he slowed down for even a second, he would become the creature's next meal. They ran, cutting the time back to their home in half. They made it inside safely, just as the sun was setting, bathing their home in a warm orange glow. Panting against the wall, Storm placed his hand over his fast-beating heart, scared of what he might see, unable to resist. Storm stumbled to a window and pulled back the blinds, peering out into the landscape. In the direction they had come from, Storm could see the back of the creature walking away. It was about 8 feet tall, with long, silky black hair that reached his waist. Where human legs should have been, there were instead long, goat-like legs ending in black, stamping hooves that kicked up dust as it walked away.
The Cabin by Karen. I have a history of paranormal activity in my life. I don't pursue it, it's just always found me. Years ago, after I retired from law enforcement at 62, I needed to keep working. I really did not want to go back to my old career. It's thankless, dangerous, and honestly, the work hardens you. So I found a job as a certified nursing assistant, helping people clean their homes, run errands, and perform personal care. Over time, I started my own housekeeping business, and for the most part, I loved my clients. But there was this one client, I'll call her Maria. Maria was a hoarder who lived in a massive cabin out in the country. It had 5 bedrooms, several acres of land, and she had this handyman who lived there and helped her out. At first, the money was good, but Maria was difficult. She'd sit me down, talk horribly about her friends for over an hour, and then let me clean. She'd get angry if I disagreed with her, even banging her fist on the table, calling me stupid. I really dreaded going there. One day, Maria asked me to clean out one of the bedrooms packed with her hoard. I opened the closet, and things just start falling out. At the very bottom, I found this jar of coins. Now, I'm not proud of this, but I put it in my bag and took it home. It was completely out of character for me. Maybe it was her endless complaining driving me nuts. I didn't intend to keep the jar, but I was so angry at her betrayal of her friends, so I just took it. When my husband saw the jar and asked what I'd done, he was pretty shocked. He told me to take it back immediately. I promised I would, but then I forgot. That's when things in Maria's cabin started to change. One day, Maria and her handyman left to run some errands, and for the first time, I was alone in the house. It should have been a relief, but suddenly, the cabin got freezing cold. My hands turned into this strange ashy color, even though I was cleaning and lifting. Maria's dog, who normally followed me everywhere, went straight into his crate and whined. Her cat was nowhere to be found. I tried to brush it off, but I knew something was wrong. The next time Maria left me alone in the house, I heard it. Thud. Something hit the floor above me, in the loft that overlooked the family room. The dog ran into his crate again. I looked up, but I didn't see anything. Thud. It happened again. I started to shake. Then I finished cleaning as fast as I could and left. The next time I came back, I saw what it was. Small rocks were being flung down from the loft area. I couldn't see who or what was throwing them, but they were coming from somewhere. I went home and told my husband. He just looked at me and said, "Did you ever take that jar of coins back?" I froze. I'd completely forgotten about them. So I found the jar, put it in my bag, and told myself, "Next time." When I got back to Maria's cabin, I brought my dog with me. She was my protector. She'd been through a lot with me. When we got there, she did a full sweep of the house, like she always does, and then went to the basement steps and laid down. That's when I grabbed the jar of coins, went to the closet, and put them back where I found them. I stood there and apologized. I told Maria's husband, if that's even who it was, that I was sorry. I told him I took the jar because I was angry, but I knew I was wrong. And then I just started to clean. That day, there were no rocks, no freezing cold. The dog followed me room to room again, just like before. Everything felt normal. Not long after my time with Maria ended, when the pandemic hit, she told her friends to drop me, claiming I'd bring the virus into their homes because I worked for other families. She asked me if I was angry, and I just said no. But I was. Because of her, I lost 3 clients in one day. But honestly, I was relieved to be done with her. So get this, about a year later, Maria's handyman called me. He said they needed a housekeeper again because Maria had fallen down the loft stairs and broke her back. I thought about it for a moment, about Maria's negativity, her endless complaints, and everything I had to go through in that house. So I told him, "I'm sorry, I just can't."
When I first heard the words, "you have lung cancer," I was in shock.
This week on a special episode of Health Discovered, we're taking a closer look at a common form of lung cancer that accounts for 85% of all cases.
I'm Janet Freeman Daly, and I've been living with non-small cell lung cancer since 2011.
Non-small cell lung cancer, it's a diagnosis that changes everything. And yet, the conversation around it too often stops at the biology and misses what patients are actually living through every single day.
There are some things you used to be able to do that you can't do anymore. It's easy to become depressed when you're dealing with all those losses. So mental health plays a really big role.
So what does it really mean to advocate for yourself when you're living with non-small cell lung cancer? Listen to Health Discovered on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's tax season, and by now, I know we're all a bit tired of numbers, but here's an important one you need to hear. $16 billion. That's how much money in refunds the IRS flagged for possible identity fraud. Here's another one. 1 in 4 honest, hardworking, taxpaying Americans has been a victim of identity theft. But it's not all grim news. LifeLock monitors millions of data points per second for your personal information and alerts you to threats you could easily miss on your own. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock's U.S.-based restoration specialist will fix it, backed by another good number, the $1 Million Protection Package. In fact, restoration is guaranteed or your money back. Don't face identity theft and financial losses alone. There's strength in numbers with LifeLock Identity Theft Protection for tax season and beyond. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart and save up to 40% your first year. That's 40% off at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
Forget everything you had planned for this weekend because you are sitting on your couch and winning from the comfort of your own home. I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play hundreds of slot games, all of the table games you love, and you could even win real cash prizes. New users, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 at spinquest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
I will never understand by accomplished tip 203. When I was probably 9 or 10, we were on a road trip up the East Coast, headed to Connecticut. We stopped at a rest stop and my family members were grabbing snacks while I decided to head to the bathroom. The rest stop was off of a highway. I don't remember what state, but it was somewhere between Pennsylvania and Connecticut. The rest stop was very big, but otherwise pretty normal. There were also different places to get food, like Subway. I was trying to find the bathroom when I found myself in a totally different section of the rest stop. Things started to look older and a little vacant. I was walking through the doors, and then I entered this one door that took me to a weird, empty room. What I walked into is unexplainable, but I'll try. I remember when I walked into the room, it looked like a disco show of some sort. All the lights were flashing rainbow colors. Waiters were walking around, serving drinks. And there were a bunch of round tables with people playing bingo. The floors were like the old speckled bowling alley floors. It almost felt like we had walked into a completely different time period. The weirdest part is, the only people making any sort of movement there were the waiters. All of the people sitting at the tables were in wheelchairs, like mechanical wheelchairs, the kind that Abby Lee uses. The people in the wheelchairs turned out to be mannequins, or at least they looked like mannequins. They appeared frozen, rock hard, but they were also very realistic looking. The image of these mannequins is ingrained in my head, and explaining it to people is quite hard. It was almost like these quote-unquote waiters were playing with the mannequins like dolls. But it was the craziest setup. The mannequins had over-the-top makeup and wigs. All of their arms were propped up on the round tables, and some even had bingo cards placed in their hands. I know what I saw. I know that this happened. It was not a dream. As a kid, this scared me for some reason, and I've never stopped thinking about it. I walked out and went straight to the car because my family had already gotten back in. I never said a word to them about it at the time. And this is still something that I just don't understand. I know it sounds crazy, but it's still something I can't explain to this day, and I just want to know what you guys think I saw. What was that? Has anyone ever heard of anything similar?
Two Stories by Red Devil 218. I have two separate stories to share, but I can't help but feel like they could be connected. I call this first story, The Lady in My Son's Room. About 7 years ago, when my wife was pregnant with our first child, we lived in a small bungalow-style starter home. It wasn't anything fancy, but we made it our own. My wife was about 7 months pregnant, and we were excitedly preparing to become parents. Like most first-time parents, we had set up the nursery well in advance, just in case our little one decided to arrive early. For context, our neighborhood was tightly packed. The houses were separated by narrow driveways, and it was common to hear neighbors, the hum of lawnmowers, kids playing, or music drifting from an open window. It was an ordinary, lively suburban street. One evening at around 8 p.m., my wife and I were relaxing in the living room. We were sharing stories about our day, the TV softly playing in the background. In the middle of one of my stories, I heard something. It was faint but distinct, a woman's voice, singing a lullaby. It was calm and soothing, like someone rocking a baby to sleep. I stopped mid-sentence and asked my wife if she heard it too. She nodded, her expression shifting from relaxed to puzzled. At first, we assumed it was coming from outside. Maybe a neighbor's window was open, or someone nearby was singing. That explanation seemed logical, but as the singing continued, an uneasy feeling crept in. The voice wasn't muffled, like you'd expect if it came from outside. It was too crisp, too clear. It sounded like it was coming from inside the house. My wife and I sat in silence, straining to pinpoint the source, but the sound seemed to be coming from the back of the house, from the nursery. "Are you going to check it out?" my wife finally asked. Her tone was calm, but I could tell she felt the same unease I did. I nodded and asked her to stay put. The hallway to the nursery was short, so it didn't take long to reach the door. The singing continued, soft, melodic, and growing clearer with each step I took. It was unmistakably coming from inside the nursery. My heart was racing as I approached this closed door, and then, out of nowhere, this overwhelming feeling of dread washed over me. It's hard to describe if you've never felt it, but it was like every instinct I had was screaming at me to stop. My body felt frozen, rooted to this spot. It wasn't fear of the unknown, it was something deeper, something primal. My instincts were telling me not to open that door. I've heard stories about people trusting their gut in moments like this, and I'm glad I did. I stood there, paralyzed for what felt like an eternity. And then, just as suddenly as it had started, the singing stopped. The oppressive sense of dread lifted, leaving me standing in the now silent hallway. After a few moments, I worked up the courage to open the door. The nursery was exactly as we'd left it, empty, peaceful, and untouched. There were no signs of anyone or anything out of place. I checked every corner, every shadow, but I found nothing. That night, I couldn't shake the feeling of unease. My wife and I discussed it, trying to rationalize what had happened, but we never came up with a satisfying explanation. Nothing like that ever happened again in that house. To this day, I can't explain what I heard, or why I couldn't bring myself to open that door in that moment. But sometimes I wonder, what would I have seen if I had ignored my instincts and walked into that room? Now for my second story, that I call Imaginary Friends. Please be aware that miscarriage is discussed in the following story. All my love. We all know about imaginary friends. Little kids, especially around 2 to 4 years old, often let their imaginations run wild, creating friends to play with. Most parents shrug it off as a normal part of growing up. But in our case, it didn't feel so normal. A little backstory. My wife and I experienced 2 miscarriages before completing our family. The grief from those losses was immense, like the world had stopped. Anyone who's been through it knows how overwhelming the pain is. If that's you, I'm truly sorry. My wife's first happened before we had any children. About a year later, we welcomed our first son, an outgoing, goofy little boy who loved making people laugh. When he was around 2 years old, he started talking about his imaginary friend. He called him John. My son would always introduce John to us as his brother John. He'd tell us about all the fun they had together, and we thought it was harmless. We'd even play along, asking questions like, "What does John look like?" or "What does John say to you?" His answers were simple, and we chalked it up to his imagination. But one day, it got weird. My son told us John was playing with him outside. I asked if John only played with him at home, or if John went with us to other places. My son said John only stayed at home. Fair enough, I thought. But then he said, "John doesn't like you and Mommy. He doesn't come around when you're here." That gave me pause, but then he added, "John wants me to go to his house." That was it. My eyes widened, and for the first time, I felt unsettled. Before, his comments had been harmless, but this, it felt wrong. This went on for about a year before John disappeared as suddenly as he'd arrived. We moved on and forgot about it. Then, a couple years later, we were lucky enough to have a second child. Around that time, we started discussing whether to have a third. Unfortunately, we experienced another miscarriage. During that time, my oldest son, now about 4 and a half, told us he had a new imaginary friend, Katie. This time, he introduced her as his sister Katie. But unlike John, Katie didn't bring the same uneasy feelings. There were no strange comments or unsettling moments. She was only around for a couple of months before fading away. Here's the part that still gives me the chills. My wife and I never told our children about the miscarriages. We didn't think they'd understand, and we didn't want to burden them with the news. But somehow, both of my son's imaginary friends, his brother John and his sister Katie, perfectly corresponded to the siblings he never got to meet. Maybe it's just a coincidence. Maybe it's not. I'll never know, but even years later, I can't stop thinking about it.
When I first heard the words, "you have lung cancer," I was in shock.
This week on a special episode of Health Discovered, we're taking a closer look at a common form of lung cancer that accounts for 85% of all cases.
I'm Janet Freeman Daly, and I've been living with non-small cell lung cancer since 2011.
Non-small cell lung cancer, it's a diagnosis that changes everything. And yet, the conversation around it too often stops at the biology and misses what patients are actually living through every single day.
There are some things you used to be able to do that you can't do anymore. It's easy to become depressed when you're dealing with all those losses. So mental health plays a really big role.
So what does it really mean to advocate for yourself when you're living with non-small cell lung cancer? Listen to Health Discovered on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's tax season, and by now, I know we're all a bit tired of numbers, but here's an important one you need to hear. $16 billion. That's how much money in refunds the IRS flagged for possible identity fraud. Here's another one. 1 in 4 honest, hardworking, taxpaying Americans has been a victim of identity theft. But it's not all grim news. LifeLock monitors millions of data points per second for your personal information and alerts you to threats you could easily miss on your own. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock's U.S.-based restoration specialist will fix it, backed by another good number, the $1 Million Protection Package. In fact, restoration is guaranteed or your money back. Don't face identity theft and financial losses alone. There's strength in numbers with LifeLock Identity Theft Protection for tax season and beyond. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart and save up to 40% your first year. That's 40% off at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
Whether it's slots or live dealers, SpinQuest.com has the fun and action you're looking for with SpinQuest exclusives, blackjack, roulette, baccarat, and even live dice with craps and bubble craps. The games never stop, so you don't have to. And right now, new users get $30 coin packs for just $10. Play now at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
So this person dies in another universe, gets to hang out as a ghost, then wakes up back here, like, in our own universe. And they're fully alive and making their bed. What are your thoughts?
My first thought was that I just love that they skipped their own funeral to hang out in a parking lot. That sounds like something you and I would do.
Yeah. The last thing I want to do is see all of my family and friends being sad and crying around my body.
Yeah, no thanks. I feel like if I were a ghost, I'd at least check out the buffet at my funeral, yeah, quietly judging the food choices. Mm-hmm. But I guess food selection could be something to put into your will. Can't be that difficult. But at the same time, we'll be dead, so who cares? I guess a buffet of whatever is fine in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, yeah. Nothing beats a good buffet. It doesn't matter where it's at or what it's for. I love the idea of being able to just pick whatever I want to eat from this large selection of different foods. I don't know. It's just so satisfying. And I guess as gross as it was, I really miss hometown buffet.
Yeah, those mozzarella sticks slept.
Yeah.
It was always the place where big families would get together when they were in town.
That's true. Oddly enough, it was always the place where the church people at the church I used to go to would go after like funerals and events like this. When I was growing up in Reading, for some reason, we always went to Hometown Buffet.
Yeah, I know. That was the spot for sure.
Yeah.
I don't know, but for the story, I think that one was quite the mind bender, the level of detail they remember. It's not your typical dream. It's got parallel universes, even that kid with the basketball asking those super existential questions.
Yeah. Yeah, the basketball kid was kind of funny when you think about it. He's like, why didn't you take me with you? I would be like, kid, I don't even know how I got here.
Yeah, don't talk to me. You're a stranger, little boy. Go home.
Yeah. <I'm>
not... Oh, man. Yeah, the idea of dying in another universe is always an interesting topic in the whole multiverse theory. Like, I've died in a dream a few times, and that is terrifying. I got shot in the head, and that hurt, and I died, and then came to, and I was still in my dream cycle. That was not fun. It was in a Sears, by the way. Some random person just shot me in the head with a .45 at the register.
Oh, that's a nightmare.
Yeah, it was really painful. Yeah, these infinite realities where every choice creates a new branch, really, really mind-blowing.
Yeah, yeah. So if they died there, and they woke up here, does that mean that their consciousness just said like, nah, I like this version better?
I guess so. It's like some cosmic save point, I guess. You die in one timeline, but the universe isn't done with you yet. So you just respawn wherever it needs you.
It was also cool that there were some people who could see him, because it kind of reminded me of those Robert Monroe stories where he would see and interact with people that he knew when he was having out-of-body experiences.
Yeah, some people didn't remember seeing him, but then there were the more sensitive people who could detect his presence.
Yeah, it makes you wonder if the afterlife is just this big chill session where you can still enjoy your morning coffee with your dead grandma like they did in the story, and then also dip in and out of other realities. It doesn't sound too bad, to be honest.
Yeah, when I think of morning coffee with the grandma, I think of dead alive with the grandma's ear falling into the soup.
I thought the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah, this could be multiverse theory, a near-death experience, I don't know, a super vivid lucid dream, some sort of, astral projection. What do you think? What do you think it really boiled down to?
I'm leaning towards a combination of astral projection and the multiverse theory.
Okay. How so?
So they basically describe their scenario, like I said, just like something you'd read out of Robert Monroe's books, like in Journeys Out of Body. And just like Robert Monroe reported, they were able to shift into different dimensions or universes. And he just kind of described like the same type of thing, but he would just call them locales. Robert Monroe always had these weird, different terms and phrases and words to use for things to try and make it all sound scientific because he didn't want to seem so woo-woo.
Well, he's a more helpful L. Ron Hubbard, let's face it.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, he called them locales. And yeah, it just kind of reminds me of a combination of those two things.
Interesting, interesting. I think I'm with you on that one. Either that or just a very lucid dream. I've had some dreams where I could have sworn it was my real waking life, like pinched myself awake and was like, oh no, this is real. And nope.
Yeah, yeah. I've had false awakenings like you were talking about earlier where I've woken up from a dream and I only realized I wasn't in a dream, you know, after some time passes and I see something out of the ordinary. It's so scary.
Yeah, the false awakenings, they're all so crazy. The thought of getting stuck in a dream loop, no. No thanks.
Yeah, I hate it when that happens.
Does that happen often?
I guess it doesn't happen often, but, you know.
It happens, yeah.
I just hate it. I don't know.
Good, that's a hate.
Yeah, anyways, this is a cool story, and I think we have some solid theories.
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, like we said, it doesn't just feel like a regular dream. I think the way they described it with all those super vivid details and the feeling of actually being alive in another reality, it's like they tapped into another version, like we talked about the multiverse thing. Also the part where they woke up and felt disoriented, like being dropped back into their body. I wonder if we could actually ever peek into our past life or alternate realities, like things that our soul has already been through or could go through. All that stuff, just super mind-blowing to think about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing wasn't all that different from the rest stop story where the author walked into that weird David Lynch scene.
Yeah, I love that these two stories kind of complemented each other. And this one, it was like the author, when they were a child, briefly just stepped into another dimension or universe, like in their waking life.
So you walk into this psychedelic bingo hall with mannequin people in wheelchairs playing bingo. What do you do then?
Well, I could totally understand why they didn't tell anyone about it. I mean, who would believe a kid saying something like this?
Yeah, good point. That's a popular reason as any other.
Yeah.
So much detail, though. The rainbow lights, bowling alley floors.
Yeah, I love a good bowling alley or arcade floor.
I've always wanted to, like, refit an entire basement with like the old school bowling alley or arcade carpet. I love that stuff.
It just gets so gross after a while.
Yeah, no, you gotta like throw some like popcorn kernels in there on purpose. But yeah, I don't know. It's everything was just so specific and uncanny in that story. It's kind of hard to chalk it up to just an overactive imagination just to get back into it.
Yeah, yeah. And this one honestly sounded more like a time slip. You know, the flooring, the disco lights, it's like some weird alternate 1970s where we're all just waiters serving mannequin overlords.
Like, it'd be kind of cool. I mean, if you dress them up nicely, that'd be kind of interesting, I guess. Like some like a retro, like futuristic retroism, retro futurism. That's it. Like the Fallout games. I could be down for that.
Yeah. Yeah. It reminded me of this scene from this movie. I saw the TV glow. It came out earlier this year, or last year. It takes place in this sort of like amusement fun center type place, and things play out eerily similar to the author's story.
I think I remember seeing advertisements for that one.
It's different. It kind of crams a lot of concepts into a movie, like alternate pasts, and it also has these very serious topics, which I can't say out loud because it would spoil the movie, but it's all very dreamlike. It's also very in love with David Lynch and that surreal style of dreamy symbolic horror that I like. So it's definitely not for everyone, but if you like that kind of stuff, it's a memorable movie. And I actually find myself thinking about it pretty often.
Did you like Toys?
Oh, I love Toys. I wouldn't compare it to Toys, but I will say that's like the perfect amount of like absurdist, silly.
Yeah.
Like dramatic tense type of movie.
For sure.
That movie is so weird and hard to describe.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah. But yeah, that I saw the TV glow. Very cool. It makes you uncomfortable and squirmy all throughout the whole movie. I liked it.
I'll have to check it out then.
Yeah, definitely.
Not kidding. I'll try. I mean, such an empty gesture, but let's be realistic.
The huge lists of recommendations for each other.
I know. So willy-nilly. Yeah, I'll commit two hours plus to my life and check out your recommendation. I do tend to watch things if like at least two people recommend it to me. It's like, okay, you know, these people know me. They've both recommended something. I should probably check it out. But
still got to watch All Quiet on the Western Front.
Oh, yeah. No, that's so good. So good.
Mm.
Speaking of good, smooth transitions here. The getting that Waverly Hills Sanatorium story by Amber. Always nice getting another one in.
Yeah, definitely. It was a spooky one. That woman in the white gown. Why is it always a white gown? It's like the dress code.
It really is. The timing is interesting, too. They see this woman at 2 a.m. on a random Tuesday in a secluded park, and years later, the tour guide basically describes her like identically. I don't think it's just a coincidence.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, not just a coincidence.
Especially because it's not like the park is easy to walk to. Who just strolls out there in the middle of the night, you know? Plus, the gown, the hair, that whole vibe, it's just a lot.
Exactly. And what about how Amber just left that gut instinct to, boom, dip out of there?
Yeah.
Gotta appreciate that intuitive survival sense.
Oh, yeah, 100%. And fight or flight kicked in hard.
Yeah.
honestly, though, I can't blame her. If I saw someone like that just gliding out of nowhere, my foot would hit the gas as well.
Yeah, same, same. What if they had stayed? I wonder if they would have had some sort of other interaction, if no harm, no foul, but that's just me.
Or worse, what if she had turned and looked at them? It's always creepier when ghosts acknowledge you. I don't know why.
Yeah, I mean, I think the blank stare is enough, but any sort of tilt or head turn, that's just, no, it's like the creepy doll that kind of like creaks its head at this on the shelf, you know?
Yeah. I used to have this weird thought in my head. It was like I saw an image play that never happened. Maybe it came from a dream. Maybe it came from a movie I saw, but I would always think when passing the bedrooms in my old apartment when I was a kid, I was say probably 8 years old, I always imagined this scene where there would be some kind of ghoul, like a ghost or some old hag in the room. And as I walked by, they would notice me, turn and look at me and look surprised. And for some reason, that image always scared me. I always imagined that happening for some reason. And them acknowledging me and looking at me with like a surprised look, for some reason, was the scariest thought ever.
Like, hey, what are you doing here, kid?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But yeah, anyway, sorry.
I'm just thinking how old hag sounds like such a harsh term. Like, I don't know, you might as well be saying geriatric whore. It's just kind of rude.
So how many people have to see her before she becomes part of the official lore? She's not just a one-off encounter. She's practically a celebrity as far as hauntings go.
They talk about her on the tour, so I guess that's pretty official, but I just want to know who she is or like how she came to be, if it's something with the property or whatever.
You know how places like Waverly Hills tend to trap energy. It could be, I don't know, something tied to the hospital, but not necessarily from a tragic death, just, you know, stuck there, lingering.
Yeah, that's the creepiest part. It's not just the building that's haunted. It's the entire property as far as we can tell. Mm. Wonder if she'll stick around there for, I don't know, much longer.
Yeah, it's only one way to find out.
Hey, you took the bait. Let's do it.
No, thanks.
All right.
Well, thanks everybody so much for listening. We hope you enjoyed the show. Make sure you send your stories in to stories@oddtrails.com and sign up for our Patreon at patreon.com/oddtrails to get ad-free versions of all of our episodes. And try out my other podcasts like Let's Not Meet, Cryptic Encounters, and the Old Time Radio Cast wherever you get your podcasts.
Try it out, man. Try it out.
Oh, yeah. We'll see y'all next week. Everybody stay safe.
Peace out.
I tried it. That's because...
and the ghouls disturb you, darling.
Try it out, man. Try it out.
I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play and win from the comfort of your own home with hundreds of slot games and all of the table games you love with real cash prizes. Right now, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 for new users. It's all at SpinQuest.com. That's SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
It's tax season, and by now, we're all a bit tired of numbers. But here's an important one you need to hear. $16 billion. That's how much money and refunds the IRS flagged for possible identity fraud. But it's not all grim news. LifeLock monitors millions of data points per second and alerts you to threats you could easily miss on your own. If your identity is stolen, they'll fix it. Guaranteed. Save up to 40% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
Here's the truth. You could literally be adored by everyone and then come home and still get completely ignored by your own cat. It's classic cat behavior. But new Shiba Premium Puree is a lickable treat that changes all that. They're protein-rich, made with bone broth, and have the smooth, creamy texture cats go crazy for, especially when it's hand-fed. Yeah, it's more than a treat. It's a fast pass to favorite human status. So feed your cat Shiba and go from totally ignored to truly adored in just 12 days, guaranteed, or your money back. Learn more at Shiba.com.